In a few short weeks, voters will head to the polls to choose the candidates they think will best represent their interests in Madison and Washington. Today, we feature conversations with candidates for Wisconsin's 30th, 70th, and 71st Assembly Districts. The 30th Assembly District is in the far western region of Wisconsin, representing residents in portions of St. Croix and Pierce counties. Today, we'll be speaking with Sarah Yacoub, the Democrat who is running for the seat. Also today, we'll speak with Democrat Remy Gomez, who is running in the 70th Assembly District. The 70th is in west central Wisconsin, covering portions of Jackson, Monroe, and La Crosse counties. But first, we'll turn to Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District, which covers a large portion of Portage County, including the city of Stevens Point. Later, we'll speak with Republican Scott Zoik. But first, Rick Ryer speaks with the incumbent in the race, Democratic Representative Katrina Shankland.
It's an honor to serve the people of central Wisconsin, and I love our community. Portage County is an incredible place with wonderful people. We're the kind of people who are always willing to help our neighbors and our community members. And over the years, as the legislator, the state representative for this community, I have met incredible people who are champions of affordable health care, good roads, expanding broadband, supporting family farmers, increasing access to good family-supporting jobs with great wages and benefits, and making sure that everyone has the opportunity to get ahead. We've got great public schools and incredible educators. And I am running to continue working on behalf of everyone. I have one of the most bipartisan records in the legislature. I've passed bills every session since I was first elected into law under both Democratic and Republican governors. And I think knowing how to get things done in a climate when we see some people would rather fight and obstruct than do the right thing by the people means that this election especially is important for our democracy and for ensuring we elect people who can get results. And that's the type of person I am, and that's why I'm running again, to continue working on behalf of everyone in the state capitol.
Well, let's take a look at the economy right now. Businesses today face significant workforce challenges, with more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate this situation?
This is a great question. I have always served on either the Workforce Development Committee or the Governor's Council on Workforce Investment, appointed by both Democratic and Republican governors. And I'm ranking of the Workforce Development Committee in the Assembly right now as well. I've toured over 100 businesses in Portage County and asked the same questions of everyone about the workforce shortage. What solutions have they proposed, and what would they like to see from the state? I think first we have to tackle the issue of child care. We have child care deserts in our state, and communities are stepping up to solve those issues. But the more that we can support community members and businesses in accessing child care, the better, because that means we have more workers who are able to move up from part-time to full-time, for example, or take another job. How can the state help with that? I think tax credits, especially as it relates to affordability for working families, are key. And then helping businesses create consortia of child care facilities to help with that, too. And businesses are working on this as well.
Inflation continues to be top of mind, that issue for many working families across the state. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and fears of recession? And what legislative steps are you taking now, or would you consider taking?
I support cracking down on price gouging and holding those accountable for doing so. And I especially supported Governor Evers' executive order on price gouging as it related to the price of gas. I think first and foremost, we need to hold bad actors accountable. And secondly, we need to work on rebuilding supply chains. Supply chain issues are rampant. And whether I'm talking to a manufacturer or a farmer, I ask them, for the equipment you need, what's on back order right now? How many extra months are you waiting? How much more is that costing you? So that I can better understand. I've been a co-author of legislation for Buy Wisconsin, so creating preference points for people to buy from Wisconsin companies, as well as Buy American, because I support ensuring not only keeping family-supporting jobs here in our state and in our country, but actually incentivizing that, which providing preference points, incentivizing Buy American policies and Buy Wisconsin policies will create and grow jobs as well.
You mentioned broadband just a little bit ago, and broadband, access to broadband is a major economic issue in our part of the state, especially in Portage County and other rural areas. What's being done now, or what are you proposing and looking into to increase broadband throughout Wisconsin?
So broadband isn't a luxury. It is a utility at this point. It is what everyone needs in order to do their jobs, get their education, access healthcare, farm, and so much more. I've supported the broadband grants in the budget throughout the process. And every budget cycle when the money is allocated, I hear from local telecoms who ask for my support in their grant-making process. And so I've written multiple letters every single year for these companies as they expand. They've expanded into the towns of Grant and Plover. They've expanded into Bevent, Shantytown, and outside of Amherst, and more. And I'll continue to do that. So I introduced a package of bills with my colleagues to expand broadband even further. And I introduced a bill called the Fiber Farms Bill, which would actually give family farmers preference in accessing rural broadband, because so much of farming these days relies on technology, and it's a huge component of their business. So I'll continue to work with members of both parties to expand access to broadband and make sure it's affordable as well as high speed.
Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban was reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
Wisconsin's existing abortion law is radical. Under this law from 1849, medical providers would be given a felony should they provide an abortion. And people need to recognize that not only was this law written and passed when women weren't even given the right to vote, they weren't even able to vote, but at this point in time, when we have doctors who have to consult attorneys when a woman has a miscarriage and is suffering from sepsis in order to perform a D&C or a D&E, that tells me that not only have our reproductive freedoms been eroded, but the people, the majority of the people in Wisconsin have not been heard on this issue. So that's why I am proud to co-author legislation to repeal Wisconsin's radical abortion law that criminalizes our medical providers. That decision is a personal decision between your faith, your family, and your doctor. I don't believe a politician should be in the room when you're making that decision.
Turning to education and education policy, what would your top priorities be as it relates to K-12 education?
K-12 education, I think first and foremost, the funding issue is something that needs to be resolved. I hear from people all the time who are concerned about their ability to stay in their homes if they have to continue to vote to raise their own taxes, their own property taxes to fund schools. Look, our schools, our kids deserve the best possible education. That their future is tied right now to whether or not seniors can afford the price of their property taxes as it goes up over time when we continue to vote for referenda. We have a $3.8 billion surplus. We absolutely can fund our schools in a way that doesn't put the burden on our seniors and homeowners. And so I think I've always wanted to look at this issue in a way that provides the best possible education to our children and also ensures people can afford the cost of staying in their home over time.
What role should schools play in teaching children about social issues such as race or sexuality? I know it's a hot button issue these days, but what do you see as the role the schools could play in that?
I'm a big proponent of local control. I think at the end of the day, people elect their school board representatives to hear them out, to play a role in their kids' education, and to work with them as parents to determine not only the curriculum, but that the choices that individual teachers are making matches the goals and requirements of the curriculum, right? So I support local control. I support school districts doing what their community wants them to do. I also support opt-outs for parents who have issues with some curriculum. But at the end of the day, what I'll say is our society is stronger because we have a diverse community, and I have authored bipartisan legislation with other legislators in central Wisconsin to actually require Hmong American education in our schools in the same way that the state requires other social studies curriculum in the schools, whether it's related to the history of slavery or whether it's related to other issues in history. And so I think, again, our community is stronger when we are celebrating our diversity, and I think the fact that we have a bipartisan bill that says so speaks to where Wisconsin is at on that issue as well.
Katrina, how do we keep our schools and our community safe in the wake of recent shootings?
We have an Office of School Safety, which I've always supported. I voted to support the creation of that office when it was first proposed. I've also voted to give local control to school districts who want to do more beyond that, including security grants. And that's something that I will always support, because I recognize that there are parents who are very concerned about school drop-off, not knowing if they'll see their kid at the end of the day. I hear their fears. I recognize their concerns, and I'll continue to vote for school safety. The Office of School Safety is funded through the state budget. That's something that I look at every year when they have a report that comes out about the number of calls. The Office of School Safety requires school districts to have safety plans, which I strongly support. And I've attended school districts meetings about school safety as well. That's something that I'll continue to take seriously and continue to listen to constituents on.
We've talked with you, Katrina, over the years on water quality issues, clean water. What is the path forward as we address contamination by PFAS?
What is the path forward? So the governor, DNR, and other state agencies, I think DHS as well, have a PFAS Action Council. And they have laid out an action plan like other states have as well. And I think what we need to understand about PFAS is that people are still testing for it in their communities. I know several communities in central Wisconsin have tested for it and seen significant levels above what was originally the state's proposed health standard. As the EPA develops a federal standard, what Wisconsin can and should do is work together to really prevent any additional contamination. We did pass a bill into law to ban training with AFFF firefighting foam, which is one of the most significant causes of PFAS. But we also know that PFAS are present in many other things like nonstick cookware, fast food packaging, stain-resistant carpet and fabric, for example. So Wisconsin now has an established PFAS health standard for a few things, but not for everything. And while I think the state could and should have done more than that, it should be noted that I've been a co-sponsor of a bill called the CLEAR Act to empower DNR and DHS to really prevent people from drinking and being exposed to PFAS contaminated soils and other health risks.
In the final minute, Katrina Shankland, please share a few things, if you wish, that separate you from your opponent. And what else would you like voters to know about you that we haven't talked about?
I have been all over the district, just as I have throughout my time in office, listening to people. I believe everyone deserves effective and responsive leadership and representation for everyone. I tell all of my constituents, regardless of how they vote, I will be there for them, and I will continue to work for them, because government works when we work together. That's why I pass bills into law every session, and that's why I continue to deliver steady leadership at the state level. I understand people are struggling, and I know that they deserve someone who will work with them to solve their problems. We can't afford to risk electing someone who is more prone to outbursts than they are to focusing on compromise and delivering solutions to the problems that are most facing people. I've gotten several meaningful bills signed into law this session, including a bill to protect our law enforcement, our EMS, and our firefighters from reckless drivers on the side of the road. I've also gotten a bill signed into law to support our farmers in investing in water quality. I've always focused on delivering results for my constituents. I encourage people to reach out to me if they have any questions. I will keep on fighting for you. I'll keep on listening to you, and I'll keep on working for you, because that's the kind of government and representation that you deserve.
You're hearing special election coverage on WPR, where we just heard from Democrat Katrina Shankland, the incumbent candidate for Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Ahead, we'll hear from her challenger, Republican Scott Soig. Welcome back to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Earlier, we heard from Democrat Katrina Shankland, the incumbent who is seeking another term to represent the state's 71st Assembly District. Now, Ezra Wall speaks with her challenger, Republican Scott Soig.
I grew up here in Portage County. I actually live in the home that I was raised in. And I have had a calling to serve, I believe, my whole life. I served in the Marine Corps when I was 19 years old. I moved back to the area in 2002. And in 2004, I got on my town board. And like I said, I've just had that willingness to serve my community, friends, family, and neighbors, the people we've grown up with my whole life. And I sit on the county board now, And this is one more opportunity where I can move on and serve the whole district, which is what I believe I was called to do.
Well, on several of the issues that we're talking about, the first one is the economy. And I want to ask you about inflation, which is a concern for a lot of people. And you talk about serving your community. If you make it into the legislature, as people face these concerns about inflation, what steps do you think can be taken at a state level to address the concerns that people are facing?
Well, the concerns that we're facing with inflation are everywhere. So the biggest thing that we can do is decrease the tax burden on our middle-class families, decrease that tax burden on them, and hold the line on taxes the best we can.
The other side of the economic question, it has not to do with individuals or individual finances, but has to do with businesses. And a lot of our small businesses right now are looking for workers, big businesses too, with more jobs open than we have workers to fill them. What can lawmakers do to mitigate that situation?
So when we're talking about business, small business, big business, you know, one of the things that we can do is eliminate the personal property tax on our small businesses. The other thing we can do is streamline the permitting process for our businesses, so they can get the people they need, they can get them licensed, and they can hit the ground running. So streamlining permitting processes is going to be the key.
Another issue that is squarely in the realm of state governments this time, it's usually been a national issue up to now, is abortion. And Wisconsin's existing abortion law is 172 years old and came back into effect after the Supreme Court recently overturned Roe versus Wade. What would you do, if anything, about Wisconsin's abortion law?
So as of right now, I am the pro-life candidate. I think the abortion law from 1848, it is the law, and we will follow that law. But if you want to have a conversation pertaining to that, I am open to a conversation of, you know, incest, rape, things along those lines. But if you're wanting to have abortion on demand up until the day of delivery, and you're not willing to move off of that, I cannot have that conversation.
We're talking to Scott Soik, who's the Republican candidate in the race for the 71st Assembly District. He faces the incumbent, the Democrat, Katrina Shankland. And that district, the 71st, is entirely within Portage County, including Stevens Point. The issue of education is important not only because it affects families with students or people who have teachers in their household, but also because it's a big expenditure for state government. So on the issue of education, what would your top priority be as a legislator?
Well, first and foremost, we need to make sure it's funded. Coming out of COVID, we know we have a hole to dig out of, and we need to make sure that we're funding K through 12 education. Again, I look forward to those conversations and the legislature moving forward and making sure that our schools have the funding they need. We need to look at mental health coming out of COVID, and we need to fund our teachers. We need to fund our districts.
Is there something that the legislature can do to help attract and maintain that qualified teacher force in Wisconsin?
That's a good question. At this point in time, I have to tell you, I'm not sure what the legislature can do to do that. And if it is something that is needed, then we absolutely have to find creative ways to do so.
And as we've seen over the last couple of years, more and more people get involved in attending school board meetings and being very vocal about what goes on in their schools. How much of a role do parents play in what curriculum is taught to their children at school, especially on issues like race or sexuality?
So parents should play the ultimate role. And I'm glad to hear in other districts that people have been attending their school board meetings. Here in Stevens Point, we've been locked out of our meetings, you know, up until here recently, this last April, this last March. So I'm glad to hear people are attending their school board meetings. And as far as the role parents play the ultimate role. These are our children, and parents need to make the decision for their children, not anyone else.
You talked about not only attracting teachers, but the importance of having a qualified public safety force, police force. On the issue of school safety, community safety, we've seen unfortunate events, including deadly shootings in the recent past. How do you keep schools and communities safe in the wake of events like this?
You know, I am super pleased that you have asked that question. And again, it comes to mental health. It comes to community involvement. We have to come together as a community and have these conversations and start enacting a plan for our schools. And I'm not talking our high schools. I'm not talking our junior highs. I'm talking for all of our schools. There are some very important things that I think we can do for our schools. And, you know, our canine resource officer is the perfect place to start. Everybody in the community loves the canine. The canines are trained to do their job, and I think we are really missing out in utilizing the canine resource officer or multiple canine resource officers in our schools at this given point in time.
There are always environmental issues that concern people, but it seems like a lot of focus is put on different aspects of our drinking water in this time around. People are concerned agriculturally with concentrated animal feeding operations and the potential for polluted water as a result. They're concerned with PFAS chemicals, those man-made forever chemicals that are showing up in a lot of our municipal water systems to one degree or another. What role should the legislature play in helping to alleviate those issues with our drinking water and other issues with the environment?
They should play a huge role. You know, this is one thing that has touched me on a personal level. I served at Camp Lejeune back in the mid-90s, and here 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer from drinking the contaminated water at Camp Lejeune. So this is something that is a very personal issue to me, and we need to do what we can for our drinking water. And this is all encompassing. You know, we have water mains in the city of Stevens Point that were put in the 1920s and 1930s that still have lead water pipes serving the homes. You know, this is an issue that hasn't been brought up that needs to be looked at. You know, typically when we replace a water main in the service, we go right up to the right of way, to the property line. And we don't replace that lead service from that point into the home. This is something that we need to look at. This is a very serious issue, and it affects everybody, not just the people living in the rural area next to the farm. It affects our people living inside the city of Stevens Point.
As we draw our conversation to a close, I want to remind people we're talking to Scott Soik, who's a Republican candidate in the 71st Assembly race. He faces the incumbent, the Democrat, Katrina Shankland, in that race, which is on Tuesday, November the 8th, of course, Election Day. And I want to ask in our final moments, Scott, give you an opportunity to distinguish yourself from your opponent. What do voters need to know about you that separates you from the incumbent in this race?
So what the voters need to know about me is my door is open, my phone is on, I will take the phone call, I will have the conversation, I just ask that you please don't call after 10 o'clock at night. I've been serving my community. I've been serving my country my whole entire adult life. I bring the viewpoint and advantage point of running a small business and serving at the most basic local level to Madison that my opponent just doesn't have. So I believe that that is very important, and that's what they need to know about me. My phone is on. My door is open. Please make the initiative to contact, and let's have the conversation.
That was Ezra Wall on Wisconsin Public Radio speaking with Scott Soig, the Republican candidate who hopes to unseat Democrat Katrina Shanklin to represent Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District. Now Rick Ryer speaks with Sarah Yacoub, the Democratic candidate for the state's 30th Assembly District. The Republican incumbent who holds the seat, Shannon Zimmerman, did not respond to our invitation to appear on this program.
My name is Sarah Yacoub, Democratic candidate for the 30th Assembly District. We are just outside the Twin Cities, Minnesota, which is enough to make our district interesting as a suburb of the Twin Cities, even though we are in Wisconsin. I am a nonprofit attorney. I do no-cost legal representation for trauma survivors, so everything from law enforcement and veterans to sexual assault and domestic abuse survivors. That has given me a front row seat to some of the barriers, or a lot of the barriers, to wellness and prosperity. And have come to a point where I feel a responsibility to plug in my experience as a deputy district attorney for Los Angeles County and as a pro bono attorney here in town for getting close to 10 years here, to plug that experience in a way that gives back to the community and sort of moves us forward on some issues that continue to hurt us in ways that we can quantify and then in ways we can't, for example, the loss of a child and so forth.
Sarah, we're going to start off on the economy and talk about some of the challenges facing business, specifically workforce challenges, with more jobs open right now than workers available to fill the open positions. What can lawmakers do now to help mitigate this situation?
Absolutely. Well, you know, as a resident of Hudson, affordable housing is certainly an issue and a barrier. We have jobs, but they are... you know, working jobs that put people in a position where they can't necessarily afford to live in the community where they work. That's a problem. Lawmakers can make Wisconsin a place where young families want to raise their children. So right now, just to illustrate the dystopian nature of what's going on, you can go to the Mall of America, buy a 5 milligram edible THC, and then be prosecuted for possessing it that next week, because we have a local DA who still allocates resources to prosecuting cannabis. So, you know, that's just one example, and there are more serious examples, obviously. But when young families are looking at to places to raise their children, they're looking for a place with affordable housing, they're looking for a place with good schools, they're looking for a place with good opportunities. And when lawmakers are chasing the big lie, for example, and stuck in 2020, or with Wisconsin's case, 1849, with the criminalization of abortion law that my opponent and his party allowed to go into effect, that's a real turnoff to young families, families who have children who are on the autism spectrum or who suffer seizures. THC is a nice relief for those children. It's non-toxic. It's a lot safer than a lot of the prescription drugs out there. And, you know, if you're a young family with kids who face those challenges, being in Wisconsin isn't a real appealing place to go. So families are understandably going elsewhere. But we need to keep growing our economy. We need to keep growing that population. We have talks about local schools closing here because we don't have the students to fill them. And, you know, policymakers can choose to prioritize our public schools as opposed to defunding them and sending that money over to private voucher schools, which is something my opponent and his party are doing. So for a number of reasons, how we legislate at the state level very much dictates the economy and whether we're regressing or moving forward, as is the hope.
And speaking of the economy, and inflation is the biggest, seems to be the biggest concern for a lot of working families. What steps can be taken at the state level to address this rising inflation and fears of a recession? And what legislative steps would you consider taking?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as with most complex problems, this isn't a one soundbite fixes all or explains all issue. But in looking at corporate profits, particularly that of the oil companies, we are seeing record highs. So this isn't simply a supply-demand basic microeconomics issue. This is, you know, a contributing factor of corporate greed. So I do support laws that regulate fairness, that make sure that corporations aren't just taking and taking and taking off the backs of working families because they can. And if you have a legislature that allows that kind of fleecing of the public or taxpayers, the company who answers to their shareholders is going to keep enriching those shareholders because that's, you know, the model of a business to succeed, and that's the prerogative of their management. They're going to keep doing that, but somebody has to step in for working families. Somebody has to step in on the price gouging and say, this is not okay. Going back to your question, we curb inflation by growing the economy.
If you are elected, Sarah, what solution would you advocate for? Specifically, what would your first step be?
Well, my first step would be to join fellow Democrats to repeal the 1849 law criminalizing abortion. It is absolutely absurd that an issue that is so deeply personal and important to everyone, not just women, not just men, not just families, but everyone has some connection to this issue. And my opponent and his party cared so little about what this means for Wisconsinites that they gaveled in and out of session in 14 seconds. That is a slap in the face to everybody. So to have a law written in 1849, not voted on by one single woman, because of course women couldn't vote then, dictate our access to health care is astounding. So that would be step one. Step two would be to join fellow Democrats in Madison and working to get that Medicaid expansion. We have billions of dollars in our tax money with the feds. And for the last 10 plus years, my opponent and his party have said, nope, not letting that money come back. And tens of thousands of Wisconsinites continue to not have access to health care as a result. Personal pet project, I'd like to see Badger Care opened up on a public option at the very least, sort of a Badger Care for all, but maintain the private insurance industry for those who choose to use it. But just simple things like that would really open up economic development, would allow people with an entrepreneurial spirit or small business spirit who want to get out and who want to try to open up their small business the freedom to do so. So a couple ideas there, but that's where I'd like to go.
Well, you mentioned the 1849 abortion ban twice in the last few minutes. You mentioned that you would work towards a full repeal of that 1849 law. What would you do to ensure that repeal, or if that is not even possible, what would you try to do instead?
So if a full repeal is not possible, would really dig into amending that law so that it aligns with 21st century medicine and science, that which we know. We've learned a few things since 1849, naturally. But if we could get it repealed, I would like to see us go a step further and work towards a state constitutional amendment to protect freedom and liberty. What it comes down to for me is the government doesn't get to force anyone to donate the use of their body, even in the name of saving a life.
Turning to education and education policy, Sarah, what is your top priority in this area?
You know, making sure that our rural schools are fully supported. I'm interested in looking at some creative ideas and making sure that they're fully funded, making sure that teachers are getting the resources they need and the support they need. I mean, we look to our teachers to be everything from social workers to babysitters to psychologists to educators and beyond. They shoulder so much of the societal responsibility to raise kids aside from parents, and we pay them a small fraction of the value of their work. So I am endorsed by WEAC. I am very proud to have their support, and I really want to work to strengthen rural schools, give them the resources they need, whether that's a social worker, whether that's two social workers, whether that's more counselors, whether that's mental health resources. One thing about expanding that Medicaid expansion, that would give us the money to get more mental health care into our schools. And of course, mental health care for youth is incredibly important. Some schools have access to therapists who come into the school, but you can only access it if you have private insurance to pay for it.
We're talking with Sarah Yacoub, who is a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 30th Assembly District on Wisconsin Public Radio. Sarah, how do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings?
We start taking the issue seriously and we start talking about it, and we start by not electing people who are puppets of the NRA. You know, we're never going to get Republicans who answer to the NRA to have an honest conversation about this, because that would cut off substantial sources of funding and support for them. They're just not going to do it. So we either buckle up for more of the same. And, you know, I live in a community where there's a substantial amount of trauma. There's a substantial amount of domestic violence. And those are commonalities for these mass shootings. And we have no shortage of guns because we're Wisconsin. We've got a very strong, healthy culture for hunting and what have you. But we start doing some common sense gun legislation that most Wisconsinites support. That's the lunacy of all this, is that most folks support something like a red flag law so that we can give law enforcement due process to get in there if somebody is in crisis.
Do you see opportunities for these solutions to be balanced with Second Amendment rights?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Second Amendment was never supposed to be, you know, open season. And if we want to be strict constitutionalists, you know, that would be limited to muskets. You know, the bullet wasn't even invented until the Second Amendment was established. So, you know, we recognize that we don't get grenades and we can't keep a nuclear bomb in our basement. And so it makes sense that we have common sense oversight that maintains safety and security.
One of the biggest topics in Wisconsin, at least legislatively, has been that of water quality. How would the state, from your perspective, address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in local water supplies?
Yes, thank you for bringing this issue up. So one of the barriers for the preservation of clean water is that Republican voters do not want to believe that their Republican representatives are tainting our water. There's this cognitive dissonance going on. They don't want to believe it. So when someone like Tom Tiffany lies to them, uses his kids and his business to further that lie about his history with conservation and water, people really feel, or they feel much better believing it rather than believe what the Democrats are saying and all the implications those carry. So, you know, it really comes down to making sure that people are held accountable.
In the final minute, Sarah Yacoub, please share some things that, as you already have a little bit, that separates you from your opponent. And if there is anything else you'd like voters to know about you that you already haven't discussed.
Yeah, really just encouraging people to get out and vote. Go to myvote.wi.gov. If we get out and vote, we can change the landscape of Wisconsin. We can move forward. It doesn't have to be more of the same. So get out and vote. Talk to your friends, your family, your colleagues, your classmates, and let's do this.
You just heard Rick Ryer speaking with Sarah Yacoub, the Democrat seeking Wisconsin's 30th Assembly seat. Her opponent, Republican Shannon Zimmerman, did not respond to our invitation to participate. When we return, we'll turn our attention to the race for Wisconsin's 70th Assembly seat on Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now, Ezra Wall talks with Democrat Remy Gomez, candidate in Wisconsin's 70th Assembly District. His opponent, Republican Nancy Vandermeer, did not respond to our invitation to participate.
My name is Remy Gomez. I'm 40 years old. I live in Toma, where I was born and raised. I'm in the South End town there. Me and my girlfriend Kayla, we have three kids. So pretty involved and pretty busy there. But outside of that, I previously sat in the city council in Toma, a couple long-range planning and planning commissions there in Toma. And then after that, I had moved along to the Mineral County Board, where I'm in my second term. You know, a lot of busy things going on here in the rural area. But why I ran, this seat ran unopposed in the 2020 cycle. So I initially, before everything got heated, it was simply choice. Having a Democratic candidate in there strengthens everybody on the ticket throughout the third CD. So, and then as things got going, the stakes got a little bit higher as we hit, hit into June. We had Roe versus Wade, and there's a whole litany of things that are attached to that, I believe. So then as I got going here, the campaign itself has led to meeting some awesome people on both sides of the aisle, believe it or not. I've had quite a few conversations with Republicans up in Wood County and Portage County. And really we're all kind of feeling the same way, a little bit unrepresented when it comes to Madison, from central and western Wisconsin.
Well, let's get down into some of these issues, including the economy, which is on everybody's mind as inflation continues to affect so many working families in Wisconsin. What steps do you think you can take at the state level as a legislator to address rising inflation and people's fears of recession?
Well, the fears of recession are always real, I feel. And, leadership has its role there. And what we have here in Wisconsin is I feel we have some great leadership with what Governor Evers has already proposed with the budget surplus. That's where I would start also. I would start right with the budget surplus and give them Wisconsin workers, Wisconsin families, and Wisconsin educators back their surplus of money. As we watch schools close around here in the Mineral County area, it's kind of sad to see that we have almost $4 billion sitting there not being used because for some reason the Republican contingency or caucus does not feel it's a time. So I might even be in for eliminating our sales tax for a portion of it. So, there's a lot of options, but I think the first option and really the most obvious option that does not raise taxes is let's get into our budget surplus and let's see what we can do to help Wisconsin families right where it's needed most, and that's in their communities.
Businesses are facing significant challenges filling out their workforce. With more jobs open than workers available to fill them. Is there anything state lawmakers can do to mitigate that situation?
When it comes to jobs right now, I live in Toma. We have a lot of great paying jobs. We got factories. We got Toro and Cardinal there. We got a Walmart distribution. What I see, what kills the places here is when those jobs are filled, those people come from outside of the area. So the housing there, the housing market in Toma doesn't sustain the workforce that they have. So it's kind of goes back to the economy portion of it, and probably will lead into a future one with housing. But workforce housing and being able to hire within your own area, leave it there and get that money spent back in that economy. Pushing trade schools, pushing technical schools, getting our high schools back to teaching the curriculums that are required for an everyday 9-to-5, because let's be honest, not everybody can stand at a factory. Not everybody's qualified with a bachelor's degree. There is a happy medium in there that is served by the folks that come from our technical colleges. So really getting into our nurses and our trades.
You talked about Roe versus Wade in your introductory statement being a motivating factor in your campaign. Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban became the law of the land again after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. So should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
Honestly, with how long it's sat there, I'm surprised it hasn't been already. I know Roe kind of set a precedent where nobody was really going to touch it. It was not really anybody's decision. I am pro-choice with the hope life becomes the outcome, simultaneously knowing that that's not my job. That's not my role. That's not my, it's not my call. When a woman and her husband or her spouse decide to have that discussion, their faith and their doctor are the only ones that there's room for in this circle. There's a lot of everything going on. So for me, I personally would codify it into our constitution that a woman's right to choose is hers and hers alone.
Let's talk about public education now. it's as an important issue for Wisconsin's families. What would your priorities be if you're elected to the state legislature on the issue of education? What are your top priorities?
Well, funding it properly, for one. I think the fact that we dip in for parochial schools or private schools into the same bucket as much as we do really hurts our K through 12 public schools. Our teachers are underfunded. There's talk of voucher program. Our teachers are unrepresented, I feel, across the state, underpaid, overworked, and underrepresented. So for me, kind of goes back to your question about how do we attack the labor. For me, I think we attack this by getting more qualified teachers in, actual teachers with college degrees in education, and that will take a funding source. But again, we have that budget surplus there. But I really think separating parochial schools or private schools from public schools and the funding sources that are used for both, I think would be a great start.
Let's turn to another subject. Your district, Portage, Wood, Jackson, Monroe counties, parts of those counties anyway. You talked about living in Toma. You're surrounded in your district by a lot of farmland, a lot of rural territory in that district. What are your environmental priorities? What would you like to see the legislature do to balance the needs of farmers and people who depend on that environment to be, you know, clean for the long term?
Yeah, absolutely. My big old district 70, it's a huge one. But you're right, through there is a lot of ag, a lot of ag resources, but we have a lot of people that truly do care about our environment. So one thing that I think we could do as state legislator is really pushing for, number one, clean water, having the right established for clean water, not just a clean water initiative. Let's establish water and clean water, clean drinking water, clean, you know, let's establish that as a right. And then let's attach that to future government so that the accountability factor is there. But also what can we do upstream to mitigate the flooding? You know, can we get floodplain awareness? Can we really get true maps of our floodplains so that we know where we're building, and awareness on when you're building any floodplain, which unfortunately floodplains grow. So as they get remapped, you know, you have houses in floodplains. What can we do to mitigate the flood damage? Well, let's get buildings out of the floodplains. You know, those are some big questions, but I think how can we do it? You know, how Monroe County attacks it is different than how La Crosse County is going to attack their PFAS. I think having well water initiatives out there, well water testing that, and I believe the state had already started something similar to that. We did here also in Monroe County, but being able to test your drinking water, and then also being able to remedy the balance in there. So I think a government slash municipality or a state slash municipality slash county effort on this and awareness on this really would go a long way.
We're talking, by the way, to Remy Gomez, the Democratic candidate in the 70th Assembly. He's running against the incumbent, Nancy Vandermeer, who's a Republican. And I want to give you, Remy, an opportunity, take, you know, 30 seconds or so to highlight one or two things that you think distinguish you from your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I'd like to thank you for having me here. This is great. This whole election campaign experience has been one that I'll never forget. It is my first election on a partisan scale. So putting a D behind your name kind of adds a little bit of flair in there. But as much as I'm a Democrat and I believe in the Democratic agenda, I live in Monroe County. I love Monroe County. I love the people of Monroe County. And a good chunk of them are not Democratic voting voters. And I'm okay with that. I don't want people necessarily to look at me as a Democrat, but somebody who they know has fought for them for years, who fights for them currently and who will continue to fight for them. Somebody will have a conversation with both sides about anything. One thing that drives my wife nuts is we can be in Walmart and I'll have a random conversation for 20 minutes about a random topic with somebody I'm not even sure it's a voter for me. But one thing for sure, If elected in November, I will represent each and every person in the district and in the state of Wisconsin, and every vote that I have or I cast or every opportunity I have will be in the best interest, or what's in the best interest for each and every person. But ultimately, if there was one word that could sum up my whole campaign strategy, is unity. I want to unify back this state, and I'm going to start with the 70th district.
That was Ezra Wall speaking with Remy Gomez, the Democratic candidate for the state's 70th Assembly District. Republican candidate Nancy Vandermeer did not respond to our invitation to speak with us for this program. Thank you for listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. You'll find all our candidate interviews after they air at WPR.org/election22. Next week, we'll hear from candidates in additional races. Find all our election coverage, from stories to candidate interviews, at WPR.org.